My name is Karina Harney, Playboy's Playmate of the Year, 1992.
And I'm Echo Johnson, Miss January, 1993. Welcome to the Bunny Chronicles. Let's go.
Showtime! All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. We've got Miss Kathy St. George in the studio with me again today.
Yes, hello there.
She
it's
is
good
our,
to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much, our guest co-host for the next couple shows filling in. And we thought it's a fun little addition for our audience out there to have some rotating playmates and
yes.
Our fellow playmate sisters come in and host the show.
Gives you a chance to meet all of us out there.
Yeah, and introduce yourself again. Tell me your month and year.
My name is Kathy St. George. I was Miss August 1982, and I was on the cover of October 1981.
Okay. All right. So we have a really, really fun guest today. I'm really grateful to Mark for coming on the show. A little bit of background. Mark was started at the mansion as a butler when he was 23 in the fall of 78, and then took over as Hef's personal valet for 3.5 years. Now, when we say valet, that does not mean driving him around solely.
No.
That means he was there for him for anything and everything that he needed from the time he got up in the morning throughout the day. And if that included driving around, I assume that would be part of it as
did
well.
Did you ever have to throw some of the girls out of the bed in the morning?
No, I would not have lasted 3.5 years if I did that. So
Mark left in the spring of 82. Like I said, he was there for a total of 3.5 years. So Mark, introduce yourself, say hello to the audience, and thank you for being here.
Well, hi guys. Yeah, Mark Hopkins here. And I'm pleased to be here. My years at the mansion were a good time until they weren't.
No, they weren't. Got it.
That's what makes for an interesting story. It
yes.
can't be all perfect, you know.
No, absolutely.
But I'm glad to hear. What would you like to know?
So typically we like to ask, how did one even come to secure a position as such? And specifically when speaking to the Playboy Mansion staff, it's always an interesting question of how did you, you know, come to be at the mansion? So what did that look like for you? We've had some funny answers anywhere from classifieds to Craigslist. So how did you come into that position?
Well, it's really a simple story. A miracle happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
It's I'll try and, you know, compress this a bit. But I grew up in Ohio, and I was going to my freshman year at Ohio University, and I ran out of money so that I couldn't go to my sophomore year. So my sister had moved out to California to try and be an actress and moved to Santa Monica. And I said, well, I'll go out to California and, you know, see what that's all about. Stay a couple of weeks and then go back. And so I got here, and I never went back. So I was going to Santa Monica College, working in a market right at the top of Santa Monica Pier. Mm-hmm. And a guy came in, and we hit it off. We became friends, and his name was Ken Allward. And Ken was a butler at the mansion, and
okay.
I didn't believe him for the longest time. But
rightfully so.
He brought me.
Too good to be true.
Yeah. He said, okay, fine. And the next day he came into the store and he had a pack of matches from the mansion and a Polaroid of himself there.
I can prove it to you.
And a notepad. And I go, holy crap, you are Ken the butler. And so we hit it off. And a couple of weeks later, she said, you know, I think you would fit right in up there. And he brought me an application.
Nice.
And I filled it out and went up for an interview, and my mind was blown.
Yeah.
When I got there, you know, walking up that back through the back gates for the first time was just, I said, this is impossible. How did I land here? There were a couple of workers were moving a coffin across the driveway, and there were just workers everywhere doing
right.
all kinds of things.
Right.
It happened, I found out later. It was approaching Halloween, and they were
right.
The coffins.
Yeah, I was going to ask. It had to be around Halloween.
Yeah, because that could be really spooky if it wasn't Halloween.
Yeah.
Why the hell is there a coffin being built?
Yeah, yeah. But I was lucky enough to get the job, and started the following Monday, and got my little, you know, butler vest, and
yeah.
And that's how it all started. It was just, like I said, honestly, pure luck. And if that wasn't enough, I was getting evicted from my apartment in Santa Monica because I had a dog and the new landlord didn't allow dogs and I wasn't going to get rid of my dog. And so I was walking him up the bike path just north of the pier, and this guy was moving his furniture out. And I said, "Oh, you holding that place for me?" Just joking. And he said, "Do you want it?" So in a period of 3 weeks, I went from a job that I just couldn't tolerate anymore to a butler at the Playboy Mansion, and went from an apartment I was being evicted from to a beach pet. I mean, it's 1415 Oceanfront Walk.
Oh, wow.
It's not there anymore, but yeah. I had to sweep sand off of
the
porch.
Sure.
So it was a great, I mean, it may have even been just within 2 weeks. But
yeah.
So that's why I say, actually, a couple of miracles happened and got me on that path.
Yeah, that seems to be the general consensus with the butlers in terms of how did you become hired as a butler? And it was through another butler.
Yes, usually.
Yeah, that was a hard position to fall into. So once you did, just like you said, it was like, awesome, I'm here. Like, this is the, and this is actually real, because same, I had Brian Olea tell me that, oh yeah, you're full of shit. You're not a butler at the mansion. I'm not. So yeah. The general consensus. So
right.
That's amazing. And what you said about walking up for the first time, that's always something that I like to ask our guest, you know, whether you're a playmate or staff or whatnot, you know, because the property, the grounds, is what was just absolutely spectacular about that place. And anybody, for the first time you go up there, you're just like, wow, is this real?
I know.
Where am I?
In fact, the grounds were my favorite part.
Absolutely.
You know, the grounds, it was just like being at Shangri-La, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, and Kathy actually told me yesterday, I didn't realize that on top of the zoo license, it was also deemed a national forest because the amount of redwoods that were on that property.
It's amazing what that place had. It's a funny little story about the we're just riffing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the zoo, you just reminded me of a funny story. There was always a legend about a ghost at the mansion, Mrs. Letts, the original owner.
Right.
And I never saw her, and I don't really believe in that kind of thing. But one time I had to go down into the front basement. There was a front basement and a rear basement, and they weren't connected.
Right.
But the front basement was lit well in the front, but then there were all these big closets and stuff, and it's kind of dark. And I was down there alone. It's a little spooky. And I heard what I thought was a thump in the back. And so, okay, that's weird. Probably nothing. But then I heard what sounded like a clawing and a thump. And I'm going, holy crap,
what is that?
And so I really honestly was nervous, so I picked up something that I could use to hit whatever it was, if it was something. I walked back, and it was dark, and all of a sudden this black furry head came at me, and it was a freaking goat. And apparently and I hightailed it out of there and went to the animal people, and I said, "There's a beast in the basement." The zoo inspector is coming up this afternoon, and we had one too many animals there. And so
they had to take the goat down to the basement. That is a cool story.
The goat was on the land. He was hiding.
Funny. Oh,
scared the crap out of me.
I don't recall ever seeing goats at the mansion. That was in the late 70s or 79, right? 80.
Yeah.
So. And you were a mom and papa dog, too. Remember, they were always in the front there. And I think you came after that. There was always these two big sheep dogs, mom and papa dogs.
Oh, they were there. Yeah. Oh, they were old when I came in.
And aggressive.
Yes.
Back to the first time I walked up to the gate, they ran out at me. And they were not, you know, all happy and greeting me. And I thought they were coming at me, ready to bite my soft parts off. And the Joe Piastro, who was a security guard at the time, he's later the chief, he came out and said, "God damn it, Mama and Papa, get off, get back here." And
that's Uncle Joe.
He saved me from Mama and Papa.
Oh, well, they were security. At least they felt like they were hanging out with security. They were going to be security, you know?
That's their job. Absolutely right.
Yeah, so. No doubt. So so you were a butler. Were you a day butler? Were you a night butler? What did your shifts look like and your duties? And talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So when you first start, I'm sure it was that way always, they rotate you through the shift. So you get a feel for all of them. So it started in the morning. So you get a sense of, okay, this is how I have to, you know, restock the bedrooms and go out and service the bathhouse and the sauna and pick up the plastic glasses and cups out there and the tennis courts. And you just, and it's the daytime. It's when most people are sober.
Yeah.
The guests and everybody there.
Right.
Getting ready to go out on their shoots. Yeah. Most of the time.
Yes.
And, most of the time.
But it was a calmer time. You know, it wasn't crazy mansion. And then the second shift, was heading into, okay, work is done. You know, let's get dinner ready and everything. And the guests would just pop in, people who had carte blanche, who didn't need to be there for a party. They could just go up and order lunch and they wouldn't even need to see half.
That was the 24-hour list.
I was on that.
You special person.
Yeah. Not everybody was.
No, they weren't. And so that's when that happened. And then there was the night shift and that a graveyard from 10 to 6:30 in the morning. And so I worked them all and really appreciated little things about all of them, but the night shift is where it happens.
Yeah.
And that was by far, although your body never acclimates itself to work in that graveyard shift. Mine never did. You know, it's just hard to sleep in the
day. Yeah, for sure.
Especially when people and they're making noise, you know, they're having fun and no, I got to sleep. But what made it so special, aside from being there when all of the stars and friends and you know, the activities were going on, is because the thing that was really special about that was that I met my friend Leland, and Leland was the night shift manager.
Okay.
He and probably the most valuable thing I walked away from the mansion with was that it was his friendship, and he's still my best friend to this day. We're gonna have dinner tonight.
Look at that!
Exciting.
Look at that. You know,
tell him hi.
From Kathy.
I love.
I will. Yeah, everybody does, and so he really taught me the ropes, and we got away with murder.
Yeah.
We just, you know, we always took our job very seriously.
Of course.
Feed half and get all of that stuff done, and we wanted to do it right. But when that had all settled down, the guests had gone home. Someone probably would have given us a joint at some point in the evening and maybe hit that. And,
yeah.
We're being honest here, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, on more than one occasion, just some star would drop in who, you know, we watched on TV forever. Like Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi came up more than once. And they came up after Hef had gone to bed. And that's when, I mean, Ashley, when he'd gone to bed, not when he went up to his room.
Yeah.
When he went up to his room, it was not when he went to bed.
It was not night time.
Everybody in it.
Yeah, not yet. Yeah.
But after we delivered his meal to him, that was it. And so Belushi and Aykroyd came up and we just hung out in the dining room with Leanne Moen, a social secretary at the time, and, you know, smoked a joint and they just like put on a show. And you can ask them. Well, they did. It's like just in their nature. And same with Robin Williams. I loved him.
How neat to be sitting there watching that. These are legends. Wow.
Oh, I'm telling you. Absolutely.
Wall Stone, even better.
That's right. At some point, I think we realized, oh, we're working here.
Yeah.
So, you guys want a drink? You want a beer?
Oh, yeah. I was supposed to offer you something.
Yeah, that's right. And so that and just sneaking around and sneaking out to the game house later, we had a kind of an unofficial pinball tournament championship with the security guards. Hef busted us once and it was embarrassing. It really was.
That's actually good because I like to ask all of the staff, did you ever get in trouble with Hef? What happened and what did he say? So what was his reaction when he found all you all playing the pinball tournament?
Well, he opened the door and he was alone.
Okay.
So, and which was kind of odd.
Yeah.
Actually, but it was late. And so I don't know what he was going out there for, but he opened the door, looked in and saw us and started to turn away. And he said, you guys know you're not supposed to be doing this out here, right?
That's it.
It's for the guests. And it was almost apologetic how he said it, but he had to lay down the law. He's paying us to play pinball.
Yeah.
And so he left, and the next day there was a memo about just a general memo about butlers and staff are not to be in the guest areas unless they're there for a purpose.
Sure.
And she let us know. But
and
I mean,
plus, he didn't want you to play better than him either. He got too good.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, and if there were any incidents that did come up like that, you know, Hef was a logical person, and he didn't lose his temper. He would just simply say something, you know, this is what it is. That's it. Right. Don't let it happen again. You know, it was like
right. She caught me one other time, and this was when I was his personal valet, and I thought he was down in Mary's office, and he usually would stay down there for, I don't know, it varied, but an hour to get all the notes from the night before and all, and, you know, give her a list of everything he needed. And so we were safe. And I said, the security guard was up there. He would always join us, and the maids would be there making the bed, and I'd be checking his clothes. And there's one point where I just said, I think I need a picture on Hef's bed. Mm. And so I climbed up there, and the security guy took it, and Hef walked in.
Oh, no, that's a big one.
And, by that time, he knew me, and we had a bit of a relationship. And he said something like, really? I hope you, really? With your shoes on?
At the very least, take your shoes off.
Yeah, but that's to your point, Echo, he didn't freak out.
Yeah.
He didn't lose it. He only got mad at me one time. And that, if you're interested in this.
Yeah, go ahead, share.
So this was when I had transitioned over and taken over the job of personal valet, and it was our first big trip.
So actually, let me ask you a question leading into that. How long were you a butler before you went into being Hef's personal valet?
Yeah, about 6 months.
Okay, actually. So that was a quick transition.
It was, absolutely, and unexpected. I would find out later that the person who had been his personal valet for several years, I don't know exactly, but he just tired of the position. He was, you know, he was a college graduate, an Air Force veteran. And he said, you know, he was training me because he trained all the butlers to be able to do the basic tasks if he was away.
Okay.
And so we just hit it off, and I asked him how he liked his job, and he said, I used to love it, and I just don't anymore. I mean, I'm really making my living by, you know, folding another man's underwear, and I just wish I could do more. And so that kind of, I don't know, loss of interest in the job led to some carelessness and him just not committing to it and making mistakes and getting in trouble for it. So it wasn't long before he resigned. And so that's why the position came available.
Okay.
And that was about 6 months in.
Okay.
And, but my time on the night shift was, invaluable for learning some of Hef's quirks. And, you know, when you had to feed him and see him at night and see how he kind of operated, it gave me a real good familiarity with who he was.
Now, what happened on the trip?
Yeah. Now go back to the story with the trip when you were his valet.
Okay. So we were going on our first trip, and I had a long list of everything that he used, and I had a partial old list from a previous trip, but I wanted to make sure everything, no matter what it was, that if he wanted something, I had it.
It was there.
And I think I even stuck a Yellow Pages or something in there if I had to call back because there was no internet. Then ridiculous. And two Styptic pencils, and he goes, I don't hardly need one, but take one of those out. It was funny. So thinking I had everything completely together, we boarded the plane, and we never flew commercial. Unfortunately, the bunny jet had been sold off already.
Oh,
I would love to have traveled on that. But we would charter, you know, special plane.
Sure.
And they were beautiful. And so we were ready, and we were up in the air, and Hef was setting up the backgammon table with a couple of friends, and he opened it up and set the thing out and had the dice, and he was looking around. I was sitting across the aisle and a couple of seats back. He said, Mark, where are the cups for the backgammon game? He didn't like to travel. He liked it once he got there, but he could be a little pissy when his routine was interrupted.
Very true.
Yeah. And I didn't play backgammon. I didn't know how important. I had checked. I had counted the stones you know, the playing pieces in there before, but I didn't know cups.
You didn't bring the and cups. So, yeah.
No, didn't bring a cup. And he said, how are we supposed to play without cups? And I was kind of mortified. I was embarrassed. You know what I mean? And because it was John Dante and Lee Wolfberg and Hef and maybe Mark Saginaw. I'm not sure if he was there, but I said, well, maybe you could use this cup. And it's just a cup, you know, the for drinking cup. And he goes, no, that won't work.
Not.
It doesn't have the little lip inside there that make the dice tumble. And he tried it and he was all frustrated. And finally, I'm not kidding.
I believe it. Yeah.
And Lee Wolfberg and John said, hey, Hef, come on, we'll throw them with our hands. And he said, okay, fine, we'll make it work. Afterward, he apologized. I mean, not profusely, and you know, but he said, I'm sorry, I, you know, got short with you. So that made me feel a little better. But what made it funny was to really alleviate any remaining tension, right after they started playing and Dante was playing Hef, Lee Wolfberg comes walking down the aisle with no pants on and no underwear, just his shirt and jacket. And so he walks down the aisle.
That's
and
great.
He's just, I have a picture of his great ass
and
Hef in the background looking down.
And what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. And that he did that just to crack Hef up and it
to lighten
worked
the mood.
Oh, and it was,
yeah.
It
sounds crack just likely.
Right.
Oh, he was a wild man.
You know, really was.
And to that point of Hefner traveling, we all know this, obviously, but for our audience, and just across the board, Hef was religious about his schedule and how he did things and how he operated, and he never, ever swayed from that. That's how he lived his life. And so when traveling, he would have, he would bring all of his own food. The chefs would make all of his own food to bring with him.
Yep.
And so it was absolutely pertinent that everything that he required on his day-to-day at the mansion was then provided when he was traveling. And he didn't like to travel at all, to your point.
Yeah.
So that would make sense that, you know, the one little faux pas of like, oh, shit, the cups.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
But that's just how he was.
I got scolded because I stayed up in bedroom 4 because Joni used to give me a lift home. She goes, just stay the night and go by the pool tomorrow. So I stayed in bedroom 4, but I'd had a few margaritas. And the next day I woke up. Yeah, now. I woke up with a little hangover. So I ordered a Bloody Mary. And it was so good. It was so good. And I thought, I think I'll go down and take a jacuzzi. So I went down to the jacuzzi. And that's the first time Brandi Roderick was there. And she had a friend there. So they got in the jacuzzi, too, and I was drinking my Bloody Mary. And they said, oh, that's really good. We're going to order some. So they brought more down. Well, I forgot because I brought mine from the house. I brought the glass.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. And he happened
to come
down.
Well, guess who comes down into the grotto?
He came down and said, whose glass is this? I went, I'm a naughty girl.
Yeah.
And he picked it up and took it out. And I walked out going, I'm so sorry. And then he told me a story from the night before. So he just changed the subject. But he's gone.
Don't do that. You know better.
Yeah.
You know better.
That's right.
So in 1979, was that the year that Christie took over as CEO, or was that 81? And my question is, was Hef still part of the day-to-day operations of Playboy, or had he completely just resided to the mansion and doing the publication at that point when you were there?
I don't know that level of detail about exactly when she took over, but in my mind and from what we saw, nothing ever changed.
Yeah.
I mean, he was still as involved as we had ever seen him from day one till the day I left. And he would run meetings, and when the bigger group would of, you know, the senior leadership team would come in and Christie was there. Derek Daniels, I think, was the president of the company for a while, and then Christie took over from that. So
okay,
I think it was 81.
I
think it's a little later.
But, yeah, because I was there when it happened, and I didn't start going till 80. So, and I remember it happening. So, I think it was 81, you know, it was around early 80s.
It is 81 because it was 1979 that they founded the HMH Foundation and Christie gave out the first award. So I get those two confused. So Hef was then at that point still very, very hands-on and involved in the day-to-day operations of Playboy Enterprises as a whole. As opposed to later on in life when he stepped back completely and only did the publication from the mansion. And then Playboy Corporate or Enterprises acted, you know, as its own entity. Which rightfully so, you know, he had done that for decades. It was time for him to put that back.
He was only
57, 58 years old at the time. So that's way too young to be retiring or stepping
out. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember his birthday party. I think it was his 56th, though. And they had that big birthday party in the backyard and Harry Mancini. It was so much fun.
UCLA marching band came.
Oh, yeah. Oh, cool. It was amazing.
How fun. You know,
this is a long shot, but do you remember they had gigantic white heavy paper posters that said it was a cake and Hef's face was drawn on it. It said, "Happy 60th." And there were three or four of those. Well, I got one of those when it was over. And Hef signed it to me.
Oh,
now I practically don't have a wall big enough to put it anywhere.
Isn't it funny? I know. I got so many great souvenirs, and I think about it now, and I go, "Where are they?" You know, well,
Kathy said today as we're driving here, she goes, "Shit, I'm almost out of all my memorabilia." She goes, "But oh well, it's just shit my family will have to throw away when I die." So true. We all have so much memorabilia of everything we've kept over the years.
I had to cut my hair off because it was a rat's nest because I had broken my leg in November, and I just wasn't quaffing my dew, and it was long, and my hair was all matted up. I mean, it's like nothing you've ever seen. It looked like something out of a scary movie.
I literally
chopped it off, and then I put it down, and one of my fans goes, "I'll buy it." I go, "Trust me, you don't want to buy this. This is not pretty."
Wow.
Oh,
great.
That's wild.
Yeah, I have a ton of that kind of stuff, too. I have a pair of silk pajamas, black ones, that had accidentally been washed in a washing machine. Silk pajamas went to the dry cleaner.
Yes. No,
all the other pajamas were washed in house. And that one. And so when they came back, the luster was off of it.
Yeah.
They were still silk pajamas, but they didn't look right. And so we would never have put them back in circulation.
Well,
so
that's cool.
I got those. And one of those orange terry cloth jumpsuits.
Oh my gosh. That's
it's funny because there's a hole right where your rear end is.
Really? No way.
He got every mile out of those.
Oh my. That is funny. That's a cool
item. I think I ended up with a bathrobe. Yeah. One of the, not the white one though, the color one.
Short one.
Short
white robes.
Yeah, the white ones were special.
So tell us what your day looked like as Hef's personal valet. I mean, would you get up with him, or not get up with him in the morning, but were you there for him in the mornings when he would arise and breakfast, and just give us an idea of what the day looked like?
Well, first of all, Hef didn't get up in the morning.
No, he did not.
He would get up about 2 o'clock.
I'm all for that.
Right.
Yeah, no, he had some blackout curtains in there that you couldn't have shot a laser beam through.
Nice.
My shift was from about 12 to 8:30. So I'd get there at noon and sit down with Mary and go over everything that we needed to go over. And this is a funny story. I'm going to back up just a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. So when that other personal valet resigned, Mary, I'd met her a few times and we'd had some interactions and we seemed to hit it off. And she said that she told the butler manager that she wanted me to just fill in for the other guy until she had time to, go through, evaluate who she wanted to be the new personal valet.
Okay.
And so she said that. She said, "Would you do that?" And I said, "Are you kidding me? Absolutely." And she, confirmed that this is not a permanent deal. This is just you're filling in until I can find someone else. I said, "That's okay. I'm looking forward to doing it. It's an honor."
Sure.
And she said, "So your first job is you're going to have to go with Hef to the Tonight Show tomorrow."
Oh.
With Sondra Theater. And I said, "I'm going to go with Hef to the Tonight Show?" And she said, "Yes. Yeah, absolutely." And I said, "Holy crap. And so that was kind of mind blowing.
Sure.
And I mean, I 6 months before, I'm working in a liquor store market on the beach, and now I'm, you know, riding with Hef. And she said, and you ride in the back with Hef and Sandra. I said, you don't want me in the back? And she said, well, unless you want to ride in the trunk, because there's a security guy in the passenger seat and the chauffeur in the front seat.
Gotcha.
And I said, okay, what do I say?
And she said, what do I say?
And she said, you could offer him a Pepsi. You need to take, you know, mm-hmm. we went over the list of things I had to take. And she said, don't be chatty, but don't be a bump on a log either. Yeah. If he says something, just take a deep breath and, you know, engage a little bit.
Sure.
And Sandra knew I was crapping my pants practically the next day because we had become friends. And she did a great job and going, you're going to do fine. You're going to do fine. And she said, but
she was very welcoming like that.
She is fabulous. And she said, and don't get uncomfortable because sometimes we like to make out in the back of the limo.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, great. And so we're sitting there, you know, and my knees are touching his and hers, depending on where the car was going, and just driving down Sunset toward Burbank and the studios. I remember thinking, God, I wish my friends could see me now.
See me now.
Because I'm only going to be here for a minute. And, you know, you've all driven in limousines and people look, they don't want to look, but they look and they want to know who's inside. And I go, it's me. but so Hef did, I wish I had a tape recorder too, because he was talking about the Beatles and their longevity and said, ask me a question about that. And I had a good answer. I mean, whatever it was, it contributed to the conversation.
Sure.
I think he asked me about another band who had that same kind of impact. And so, but anyway, I just said, yes, I didn't say anything stupid. And that was all I
needed. You just agreed. Yes.
My day is done. So we got there and Sandra and I, you know, Hef was in the green room and she wanted some Lay's potato chips. And when everything worked out beautifully. And when we left, I took his nameplate off the green room door or his, you know, the guest room door, wherever he was staying. And, I gave it to Mary the next day and she said, well, congratulations. You passed.
Yeah.
And I said, passed what? And she said, well, that was kind of an audition. That was kind of a test just to see how you would get along with Hef and Sandra and how you handled yourself.
Intimately on that level, because you were with him closely, just like that, in that sort of aspect. The Butlers weren't necessarily intimately on the day-to-day with him, you know, so that makes sense.
That's right. And so I didn't, honestly, I probably understood what she said, but I just wasn't believing it. And I'm done. She said, if you're interested, I'd like to offer you the job as Hef's personal valet.
Oh, wow.
And that, I mean, I'm almost getting emotional now. That's ridiculous. I know, but you've made me think about it again.
It's not.
And for that 23, 24-year-old guy that I was just so happy for him.
Absolutely. It was huge. It was an honor for sure.
Amazing moment. And so over the next week, I'm leading back to your original question.
That's you're good.
Getting to a point. She said, first thing I want you to do is go through all of his drawers. I want you to know where everything is. I want you to know what he likes for snacks and you know, everything about him. And so I was in there we used the Polaroid for a lot. And so I would take pictures of what was in each drawer so I would know, you know, where they were. And I was taking a picture of his underwear drawer. It was up top. And he walked in. I didn't see him behind me. And he said, why are you taking pictures of my underwear? Like,
what are you doing, Mark? Yeah.
What the hell? Maybe I made a
weirdo.
Mistake here. Yeah. And I said, well, sorry, Mary told me that I needed to know what was in your drawers, all of them. And he goes, well, I guess that makes good sense.
Yeah.
Have at it. And then he came back in a few minutes later and said, you know, while you're at it, while you've got the camera, can you come with me and help me? And sure. And so we went into the main bedroom, and it wasn't the bedroom you know today. It was a really boring beige French provincial kind of a bedroom. It was the same footprint But it didn't have the spiral staircase up into the upper mm-hmm. area. There was right. no upper area.
Right.
It was just boring. Bathroom was the same, but the rest of it was crap.
Okay.
And so we were getting ready for a massive renovation to what you see now.
Oh, wow.
And and so I think most people know Hef had stuff all over the floor. And I mean, little piles, 100 of them in a project or mm-hmm. photos or something. But he could navigate them pretty well and yeah. he could go find what he wanted. But if we're going to move them, it was going to be, you know, a little bit of a challenge if we didn't have a record. So I went in and we worked together. He said, take a picture of this, take a picture of this. And he said, and so we did that. He said, now we have to go through all the stuff around here, all of the gifts that he'd been given. And he said, Mary told me I had to get rid of everything that I didn't absolutely love. So
smart.
So
Mary.
go get some transfer cases. They're cardboard boxes essentially. And let's get this done.
Yeah.
And so he was, you know, putting stuff in there and some, he said, just put it and throw it away. I don't want it anymore. And some we would store and put up, you know, he was a diary scrapbook fanatic.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he really liked to save everything. And so we're going through all of his stuff. And I picked up this, he said, and get rid of that. And he pointed to something on the floor and I picked it up and it was a blow-up doll.
Oh.
a blow-up sex toy doll.
Sex toy doll.
Still in the package.
Yeah.
Somebody had just probably given it to him as a gag.
A gag, yeah.
And I said, you mean you don't want this? You're just going to throw it away? And and he said, why? Do you want it?
I get the real deal.
Yeah. I said, well, not for me, but I'm a photographer. Oh. And it could be a really, you know, cool prop.
Oh, yeah.
For some shoot. And he said, hey, you don't need to make any, you don't have to explain anything to me. You kids have a nice life. And so, we kind of started developing a relationship then, a more casual one.
Sure. Conversation was very important yes. to have. And obviously we know that, you know, and the people that had the opportunity to be very close to him, that's what they would always talk about is like his capacity to listen and his capacity to be so, you know, there
and
engaged. Yes. And he loved dialogue. So that completely makes sense that he would want to be able to have that with you and what grew into a great relationship, a great working relationship as well.
Do you remember, I don't know if you remember, but there was one year at Christmas, it was early 80s. They had a Lucite model of a Hitachi magic wand made for him as a gift, and it was Lucite. Anyway,
wow.
Yeah, Tom Stabler had it done. And at the time, I'd been married for a long time, and I wasn't really dating, and Hef had said to me, you know, I'd love you to come up and visit. And I said, well, I haven't been around enough. I think I'd be a buzzkill. But I said, so as a joke, after they made the Lucite Hitachi magic wand, they gave it to me and said, you need this more than anyone.
No way.
I swear to God. Yeah. And I kept it for years.
I bet.
You better still have it.
I actually blew it up.
Oh.
Why? Really? She blew it up.
Because I enjoyed it.
that's hilarious. Yeah, that was the Hitachi two-speed magic
wand. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I had to order them.
You had to order them. You're like, I'm very familiar with that.
They were... It changed my life.
It changed my life. That's awesome. Great.
And it came from Hef.
I know. That's awesome. Back to your original question, I would get in, see Mary, find out what was going on, and then go down and, you know, find his cleaning and do all of that stuff. Sometimes I did all the shopping. I bought all of his clothes for him. So I'd have to go into Rodeo Drive and to... Bijan or Mr. Guy or his tailor, Tasso Caravellas. And I was just a goofball. You know, I wasn't sophisticated, Beverly Hills Rodeo Drive shopper.
Sure.
So it was a really crazy experience for me. I remember going to Bijan and at the time you didn't just walk in, you had to have an appointment.
That's right.
But I knocked on the door and they explained that to me and I said, well, I'm Hugh Hefner's personal valet. And she said, well, do you have a card or anything? I said, no, I don't have any business cards. But he was kind enough to let me in. Mm. Anyway, he believed me. And his daughter, who worked for him, brought over a bowl of cigarettes. You know, that said, would you care for a cigarette? I don't remember if he took it or not. But can I get it was a crystal ball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It placed on the top. And asked me if I'd like a drink. And I mean, it was just otherworldly, honestly.
For sure. So, for sure.
I would have to do that kind of stuff. And then we'd get the call that Hef was out of his room and he was with Mary. And then that's when I'd call security and call the maids and the plant people, whoever needed to go up there at that time. And they would all do their work and we'd get it all straightened out and then, you know, leave and spend the rest of my day. Sometimes I'd have to help. Got somebody walking behind me. Yeah, sorry.
You're fine.
Somebody's got to take care of that pool. And so sometimes, like I said, I would work with the butlers on other stuff. And I worked on putting together a kind of a handbook of how to be Hef's valet because one didn't exist before. And I always thought how handy that would have been if I had that.
Sure.
Because I would have known about that damn backgammon.
No, I was just thinking that. You would not have left those cups.
Yeah.
You know,
and
go ahead.
No, that's all right. That's kind of how a normal day would go.
Yeah. Yeah. Every finite detail. I mean, you were there for him and then you grew to understand exactly, you know, what he wanted and needed on the daily and even the hourly. And you were there to provide. So you're the second interview that talked about taking Polaroids of Hefner's room. We had interviewed three of the butlers together last season, and they had to go in there to clear it out for a photo shoot. And they said, like you, that Hef had piles everywhere. He knew exactly where everything was. He has a photographic memory, and so you better put everything back exactly where it was or he's not going to be happy. So they went in there with a Polaroid camera and took pictures of every little square inch of that room and then put it back once the photo shoot had occurred.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you were the first one to do that or if Mary had kind of created that. But that's smart. Makes sense.
He's very OCD.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't have cell phones, obviously. And
and
to take them with a regular camera would have just been kind of cumbersome to send a film out and have it printed.
Sure.
It would have worked, but Polaroid was a great solution. You know, you mentioned having to take care of, you know, his specific needs. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, when I came in, the first thing I would do was be to stop at Mary's and we'd go over the notes from the night before that the social secretaries had taken.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when things would come up and said, oh, Hef's out of this, or which I hoped it was never me. I never wanted to let him run out of anything.
Sure.
And I was almost 100% with that. And, but he had run out of rolling papers. And so the note said, Hef needs some double wide, easy wider rolling papers and a new rolling machine. And she said, I can't read this right. So a new rubber tongue. So, what?
Huh? And, what is that?
And Leanne had written a note. And so she talked to her and he said, yeah, a rubber tongue. Hef says he can't find his old rubber tongue. I said, well, I mean, is it just a sex toy? How does it work? He said, well, yeah, that's exactly what it is. And she said, you need to go to the pleasure chest, or there was another sex shop in Hollywood. I forget what it was called, but you need to, what was it?
It was on Santa Monica too. It was on Santa Monica up a little bit, but yeah, I know both of them.
Yeah.
I don't know why. And I drove past them.
Yeah. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, right, right. Kathy.
Oh, hey, Kathy, good to see you again.
Oops, walking out with my bag full.
Yeah. A rubber tongue. Now, would it go on the end of your tongue, I assume?
So that's what I assumed, too.
Yeah.
So she said, I'm sure they have them there. But again, no internet, so you couldn't do the search. You could call or you could go in. And I'd never been to a sex shop, and I thought, why not? Let's go. It'd be fun. And so I asked the guy, do you have any rubber tongues? And this place was huge, and they had everything from sex furniture to oils and toys and clothes and, you know, everything. And I'm just going, holy crap, so much I don't know. And I said, where are the rubber tongues? And he said, what? the guy that ran the sex store says you didn't know what a rubber tongue was. And I said, you know, they kind of just slip over your own tongue to make it longer so you can go pleasure people.
Right.
And he goes, we don't have anything like that. You mean like a kiss, like the band Kiss? And I go, I don't know. I've never actually seen one. He said, no, I don't. Sorry. So I went to the other sex store. Whatever you call it. And same story. They'd never heard of them and they didn't have any. And so I came back and Hef happened to be in with Mary when I walked through the door. And I said, you know, I couldn't find a rubber tongue. And I remember him saying, who ever thought rubber tongues would go out of style? And I thought that was cool.
That's awesome.
So I said, well, I'm not giving up, though. So I did some research and found this woman who ran a boutique where she had sex toys for handicapped people who couldn't reach themselves, you know, with their hands. And so she would make, yeah, I don't know what all she makes. I didn't see the catalog, but that's what she did. And I said, could you make a rubber tongue? And she said, yeah, I think I can do that. Oh, I still have a letter from her. And so she made two. And so Hef was really happy that we'd come through.
Good job, but Mark. He's like, you came through solid. Two of them, no less. I love it.
I can't believe he even ran out of one in the first place and had to get an image. It's like,
he lost
man,
it.
And then I thought... I thought maybe it was something to wet the rolling papers at first when you were saying, and a rubber tongue. And then I realized, no, it's really a rubber tongue. You know,
I should have separated those stories.
No, but I thought it went well together.
Yeah, it did. And first thing I thought of, though, was the band Kiss with their long-ass tongue. And I'm like, oh, how cool. So you put on a rubber tongue on your tongue and go to town. Very interesting.
Yeah, but it was latex and soft. And so.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, that's a very talented woman that made that. For you too.
Yeah.
So this was the era of Sandra Theodore. So it was late 70s, early 80s. So they were not married. So the parties and whatnot were still happening, right? The annual parties. Was that still going on at the mansion in that time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They weren't married, but she was the number one woman.
For many years, like 5 years, I believe.
I want to say 5 years. Yeah. She was there a little bit before me, you know, a couple of years. And we left roughly the same time. And so, yes, Sandra was the number one squeeze. And I remember he had another girlfriend who came up occasionally.
Heather.
Yeah, Heather.
Okay.
I was staying away from names, but it's
oh,
it's
no, but she always talks about it on social media and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Heather was sweet, too.
I loved her, too.
Neither one of them were wrong, but how could you be in that situation and not be a little unhappy about it? Hef was open and honest about it.
Absolutely.
They both knew what they were getting into.
Absolutely.
But
and she
still,
was only on Thursday. Thursday.
Oh, good memory.
So that's actually a good little
photographic.
That's a good little nugget or factoid, whatever you want to call it, because I didn't know that. I thought that he was with Sandra solely. Obviously, I knew later on in life he had the multiple girlfriends because I was there and I saw it. But and then when he was with Kimberly, he was married to Kimberly and he was completely devoted and faithful. But that would make sense that he would have another girlfriend, and she would come.
But Sandra was number one.
Yeah,
number one.
Sandra was the woman of the house, and they were together an extended period of time. But during that time, he did have a girlfriend that would come up once a week. So,
if she was around,
Sandra and I became good friends, and are still to this day. And I have a really sweet memory of Mary O'Connor asking me to join her. And Sandra and Hef and Alex, Sandra's dog, under the Christmas tree on Christmas Eve. Aww. As they opened gifts together.
Yeah.
And so it was like she was taking notes and I probably took pictures, but just to be there if they needed anything.
Yeah.
And it was really a touching, homey moment. Like maybe one of the most that I ever experienced there. And I did it twice during my time. And one of the gifts that Sandra opened was a little package, and she opened it, and it was a ring.
Oh.
And she says, it's not an engagement ring, but it's a ring that says, I care for you a great deal. And she started crying, of course, and put her arms around him and said, I think you're going to get lucky tonight.
I think you're going to get lucky. That's so sweet.
And Alex went, oops. That dog was so cute.
That's cute.
He was kind of mean, too.
Oh, yeah.
He was cute, but he'd bite you.
Yeah.
You know, I like what you just said about like of that moment, and that it was the mansion was so comfortable, and it was a home at the end of the day. And people don't understand that or know that, you know, and
yeah, absolutely right.
And it was lovely when you got to be a part of those moments and experience those moments, even just if you're coming up for movie night or whatever, or Tuesday night dinner, whatever, anytime you had an opportunity to be there with Hef and his best friends and, you know, a group of women. It was always, it was so precious, precious times. We were so yes. fortunate to be a part of that.
It was a really good time in the 80s. It was like a sorority. I mean, I remember I went up, when I first started going up, I didn't really know him well. You know, I was kind of on the outskirts. I would be hanging out with Heidi, you know?
Yeah.
And, but then they called me to do his makeup for Halloween. And
I was like,
oh my God, I'm so scared. I'm so scared. And I was like, because I was going to be one-on-one talking to him in his room all by himself. And I had to make him a vampire. And then I would love to get that picture still, because there was a picture on the wall for years of her. And I did her as Supergirl. But it was such a good opportunity to have one-on-one conversation with him. And he was so nice to me.
Right. And, break the ice to him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it is the first time, you know, you have the opportunity to meet Hef. It's intimidating.
I mean,
you don't really
I'm right up in his face. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, my gosh, he's an absolute sweetheart.
He's
respectful of everybody. You know, you respect him, and he will
respect
you.
And he didn't forget me after that either.
No.
Whenever he'd see me in the house, it was always, hey.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That was always amazing. Yeah. He always remembered everybody's names. Everybody. Well, he was a genius. He was right brain and left brain is what Karina and I always like to say. He was an absolute genius.
He was absolutely super intelligent.
Highly.
You know, something you just said reminded me of this, but when I was still early on as his personal valet, I had to lay his tux out for him and brush it off and make sure it was all ready. And some tuxedo shirts they have buttons that you have to put in.
Right.
They're not attached to the shirt. They're like little studs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hadn't done that before. I don't think I'd ever, well, probably my high school prom. I put a tux on. But so I did that for him. And then he came in and you know, put on his shirt. He dressed himself. I didn't have to dress him. Made that clear early on. It wouldn't be needed. And he called down for me. I left and he called down and said, come on up. And so I went up and he said, these buttons that you put on were, they're in the wrong way. They're in for like a woman's. Women's buttons are opposite. I put them in the wrong side.
Oh,
it looked fine.
Yeah.
It looked fine looking at it. But he didn't go, you put the buttons in the wrong
side. Yeah, he's like, let me show you. Yeah.
He said, this is an easy mistake to make. I've done it myself. Mm. But he said, if you need to, you can put the shirt on first, roughly the same size, before you put the buttons on and you get it right. So he was always, to me, he was, other than the backgammon cups, he was always kind and considerate. And I mean, he had things that he wanted done, but he didn't deliver those wants in a demanding or, you know, tyrannical way at all.
Never condescending. Uh-uh.
And he was kind to the people around him. Mm-hmm. And that's,
thank you. Thank you for saying that. You know, that's invaluable and so important, again, for us just to continually reiterate throughout these interviews, because obviously, you know, the mainstream media has painted this whole picture of him that's completely false and wrong and a narrative that, you know, suits other people. And we all know, you know, he was such a kind man. He was a generous man. He was respectful. He was interesting. He was funny. I mean, you know,
every picture I have, I went through some of my photos and showed them to her last night.
Wow.
All my photos that I have with him and every single one, we are both cracking up.
Yeah.
We're always laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I'm standing alone and he's laughing. I mean, every single one we're laughing.
cracking
up. That's hilarious.
Cracking up. Well, Mark, we're getting towards the end, so we're going to wrap up the interview. We like to end our show with two questions. Do you want to ask?
No, I mean, that's you doing it. Okay. I had a hard enough time with them yesterday.
Okay, so three words that define Hef to you.
Oh, boy. So I think Hef was a pioneer.
Yeah.
He, in many ways, but in his advocacy for civil rights.
Yes.
At a time when civil rights, I mean, Jim Crow was very much a real thing at the time, and he was bold and had black guests on the show and in his employ and, mm-hmm. and fought for those causes, not to mention reform of marijuana laws and a whole lot of other causes. So I think he was a pioneer. I think he was a romantic, like a hopeless romantic.
Absolutely.
I think everybody thinks first about sex and naked women and all of that. And that was certainly a part of it. But I just saw so many clues that Hef was, his whole life was looking to find that one forever love. And, you know, whether it came from his love of the movies and he saw that or what, but that's kind of what drove him. And what he wanted was unachievable in my estimation. I don't think he ever found it with anyone.
Sure.
But that's just my opinion.
No, I agree with that because he absolutely was in love with the idea of love.
Yes.
He was.
Exactly.
And whether or not he was fully, you know, rewarded with it or felt content, we don't know. But
he was a great listener.
Yeah.
And he loved everything about women, not just when we were pretty or not just he would listen to the stuff that most men don't want to listen to. Like if you broke up with a boyfriend or this, and he'd sit there and listen and go and talk to you. He loved everything about women, not just what they look like in a pair of
the sex
and a bra
aspect.
Panty.
Yeah, exactly. But exactly.
Mm-hmm. And the whole act of courting, partying,
yes.
and I mean, I had to go out and buy Jackie Gleason albums for him. I didn't even know Jackie Gleason did music, but it's all that kind of Rat Pack era,
he loved
cocktail
it.
Music. Yeah, and it was romantic, and
absolutely.
And so yeah, so that's what part of Hef is to me, and I don't. He was an enigma to me.
Oh, good one. I like that.
I have four sisters, and so none of them think, they don't trash Hef or anything, but they think that he, you know, created a world that was just self-serving, and part of it was, let's be honest, but it wasn't, I don't think it was, you know, this is where I struggle. This is why the enigma part, I wrestle with it all the time, because what I saw were, was a guy who created a world that the people that I saw were happy and they weren't manipulated. But the reality is that he was a fully grown adult and they're much younger. And yes, it's their free will. They're making the choices. But
correct.
Are they, you know, he's got a full blown evolved mind and they're just growing. So was it right? And so it's just something I wrestle with. But I know everybody has very strong opinions about it.
He made my world a happier place.
And,
yes.
And at the end of the day, you know, to that point, Hef was very, very, very clear about who he was, what he did, and what he wanted. Okay.
Right.
And so it always seems to fall on Hef of, oh, he was this person, and he did this, and he did that. But at the end of the day, the girlfriends, and I can speak more towards, you know, the women of the 90s and the 2000s, they knew exactly what they were getting into. They were very clear. They also were 19, 20, 21 years old, and they made a choice to be a part of a 3 to 7 part girlfriend with an 80-something-year-old man, okay?
Right.
Which
that's
was
fine.
Mostly watching movies and eating popcorn,
right.
Anyway.
And that's fine. That's their choice, you know? But he never, you know,
you may or may not agree with how he lived his life, but he designed his life exactly how he wanted to live it.
And,
rightfully so, you know?
Every woman had the option to say no.
Yeah.
Every woman had the option and would not be treated any differently if she did.
Exactly.
He loved her just the same.
Exactly. Yeah.
I agree with you, and that's why it's an enigma, because this other element. But what I saw is what you described.
Yeah.
And if somebody had a different experience down the line as they look back on their life, like, you know, some people did, they are just looking at it now from a different perspective with their own fully evolved mind.
Exactly. And,
you know, and they have every right to express how they feel, even though they were having a good time at the time. And but looking back and going, what the F was I doing? So I just like to leave that open. Let people.
I like to think I was the bad influence for some of the men in my life.
Well, leaving glasses all over the place.
Oh, no kidding. Do you know what that does to a jacuzzi? He said.
to that grotto.
Don't
mess it up, Gabby.
That's so funny.
Okay. So second question. If you had a chance to say anything to Hef before he passed or in memoriam, what would you say?
I'd say thanks for having the strength to follow your dream.
Aww.
And to create a world that some people disagree with, but just kind of what you just said, that you followed your dream despite not having very many resources, you know, at the beginning, a kitchen table, a few $100, and creating an empire out of it. And, you know, and thanks for the opportunity for letting me be a part of it. And thanks for the blow up.
I'm getting touched.
Thanks for the blow up. Oh, I love it. I always get choked up at the end when, because everybody has different
thanks for sharing it with us, Hef.
Yeah, in particular to, you know, three words that define Hef to you. But ultimately, with a second question, everybody for the most part says, just thank you. Thank you for including me on this journey. And we all get choked up. And it's just like, it's so true. It's like, again, we were so blessed.
I had a blast with Mark around.
Yeah.
I loved Mark around the house.
We went to the drive-in.
We went to the drive-in movies and did double features. And we would have a cooler with Bailey's and whatever we wanted. We would just pour ourselves drinks and eat sandwiches at the movies.
And there, that points right too. And you talked about this earlier.
I remember the movies.
We're so blessed to have this Playboy family and our Playmate sisterhood. And I don't know of any other Fortune 500 company empire that would maintain the type of relationships that we all do. And it's because it was such a special place. And
we a family.
Were a part of it. And we're the only people in the world that can say we were a part of that. And that's awesome. Yeah. And
That's right.
Yeah.
It's valuable. Followed me in a positive way for my whole life.
Nice.
People are always just blown away. But what? You did what? And they don't believe me, just like, well, they
do. I know. It's so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so cool. Amazing.
Oh, my gosh. Well, what a great interview. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I know you're on holiday and you squeezed it in and I really appreciate it. And tell your missus I said thank you too for, you know, letting us borrow you.
I'll do that.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you guys did a great job too. So
thank you. We appreciate it. Thanks to our audience. I'm Echo.
And I'm Kathy.
And this is
The Bunny Chronicles.
See you next time.